Hey, good morning, everyone. This is Dave Weiner, Friday, February 17th, 2017. So this is worth bringing up. I'm working on a project that I call Electron Runner. And that's because the project as it was initially conceived was to merge, to put Node Runner, I'll explain what that is in a sec, to take the Node Runner app, which is a Node.js app, and bring it into an Electron shell. Electron is a very interesting piece of software. What it does is it combines Chrome and Node.js into one user interface that, interestingly, can both connect up with the command line in the Mac. And on Windows and Unix too, of course, runs on all these places because the UI is Chrome and Node. Both are like totally cross-platform, run everywhere type thing. And so it can both access the command line and have a web interface. It's at the same time, and it can access the file system, and it can do stuff on the internet. And it's, you know, obviously an incredibly powerful place. And so, you know, I've been programming in JavaScript pretty much exclusively for the last like 4 years, and I am finally getting good at it, to say. And I'm getting to the point now where I was with C in, I'm gonna say, well, 1987 or so. For a few, well, you know, and that took me a while. I mean, I started programming in C in the late 70s. So, yeah. I mean, it would, of course, take longer the first time through to get really to the point where I'm ready to sort of like move the platform up to the next level, which is what I did with the Macintosh. The same idea, really, actually, if you think about it. The Mac had a graphic user interface. And it had a file system and an operating system. And people didn't like to talk about the operating system on the Mac, but it had one. And it was a very capable one compared to what had come before, which was more capable than Windows. What came before actually was MS-DOS. Because it had a scheduler. I mean, basically, apps shared the CPU. Whereas on the PC, it happened, but it happened without the support of the operating system. And I know because I was very much involved in that in the 80s, mid-80s, because I did a program called Ready, which was a TSR, Terminate and Stay Resident app. And it coexisted with one other app. There was a foreground app, and then there was a TSR app. And it could have theoretically supported many TSR apps, and all of the TSR apps could have become full-blown apps, and the OS could have evolved to be a Mac OS type operating system. And I actually went to meet with Bill Gates in 1985 to tell him about this and ask that he add support. And I had very specific things I wanted. First step, second step. First step was, fucking just give us a clipboard. Manage the data transfer between all these different software entities and, you know, provide a set of rules, you know, and an API so that we actually, so that the user can, I digress. Evolution is the way to go. Let's put it that way. And Microsoft didn't want to do that. What he said was, I should just finish the story. What he said was, well, you know, our next version of the operating system will have that and much more. And he was talking about OS 2, but it was, the problem was is that it was, you know, it didn't run the same apps. And that's the thing is that users want the features in the apps they're using, not in an operating system that has no apps, which is, you know, eventually OS 2 got the apps, but never was the, you know, the juggernaut that, you know, MS-DOS was, or Mac. So the thought on the Mac was, well, here I am. Okay, I'm a C programmer, and I've got all this experience, and I'm loving the graphic user interface, but I'm totally missing the ability to program the OS, because that was something we had on Unix. And, you know, you would write these little shell scripts, and it's there's like two kinds of development. There's the development, and I think they call this DevOps now. Okay, they actually have a name for it. There's DevOps, and then there's application development. And the application development, you're pulling out all the stops, and you really work on, like, really every aspect of the use, the utility of the program. You're designing it so that it feels like a passenger riding on an airliner, you know. And, you know, the seat might be cramped, but, you know, there's a seat belt. It's been safety tested. There's procedures for getting people on and off the airplane. You know, it's all very thought through. And so there's that kind of development. And then there's the kind of development that's, like, just for you. And it's ad hoc, and you don't want to put too much time into it. You don't really care how it looks. What you care about is that it work. And you also care that it not take much effort to do, because your main work is over there doing the app development. At least in my case, it is. That's where I want to be working. But, you know, we moved to the web, and all of a sudden, the need for these, you know, scripts, they're called the scripts, just it explodes, because now you're managing content, you're doing content management, really, and you're evolving systems. So the longer you do it, the more of this kind of, you know, script glue you need, connective glue. Anyway, so then years and years go by, well, you see, in 1992, starting in 88, actually starting considerably before 88, but shipping in 1992 was, I released a product called Frontier for the Mac, which had both a graphic user interface, but a very bare bones one. It wasn't like HyperCard or its, you know, progeny, things that came after HyperCard. So it had a very spare functional user interface, graphic user interface. And it also could control apps in the file system and do inter-application communication, because we saw that that was a possibility. We went full bore. I worked on this full time for 4 years. And I had other people working with me on it. And it was a total... I felt this was, you know, we were doing the next OS. And looking back on it, I really think we were. It's just that for whatever reason, it didn't get adopted as such. So it was seen, I don't know how it was seen by other people, but for me, it was both my content management system. It evolved to be that, because with all the graphic capabilities it had, it was a superior way to do websites. And it was also the first way to do blogging. And it was like, if it had been the other way around, if it had come later, if blogging had come first and then Frontier, it would be a very different situation. But Frontier existed, and blogging sort of blossomed out of it, came out of this environment, as did RSS, as did XMLRPC, and ultimately SOAP. A lot of great things came out of Frontier that became famous, but Frontier itself didn't become famous. And you know, people would say, well, how are you so productive? And I would say, yeah, I have great tools. I made a big investment in tools. And it was very true, is that that was my differentiator. That was the thing that made it possible for me to move so fast. It was also my downfall, because we tried to deploy in Frontier, and it was tantalizing. The problem was, we never got the reliability and performance out of runtime performance out of Frontier that they got out of PHP. And reliability and performance turned out to be more important than elegance of development, by far. You know, we could develop much more quickly, and we could go a lot further than our competitors, and we did. moved more quickly and went a lot further. However, their systems scaled up and ours died at around 1,000 users. That was about it. Couldn't go beyond that. The system would just, we would get threading errors. It would just, the machines would flatline, and there was no economic way to make that work in the Web 2.0 world. It wasn't designed for Web 2.0. And so, anyway, we found other ways around it, but I don't want to go into all that, you know. The product eventually, no, I don't want to go down, let's not go down that route. So, anyway, years and years go by, and I'm constantly dealing, I'm still working at Frontier, and I'm constantly dealing with the problem that somebody comes out with a toolkit or an API, and I want desperately to include that in the work that I'm doing, but it requires connective glue. And of course, the vendors never produce connective glue for Frontier. They don't even know it exists. And it certainly doesn't have anything like enough users to justify the investment for them. So if I wanted I would have to develop the glue myself, which meant most of the time doing without and not being able to connect up with some great web service that I wanted to use. But I did get connected up to OAuth and to Flickr and... Flickr? Yeah, Flickr. God, it's been so long since I thought about Flickr. They had a great API. They have a great API. And it was the predecessor of basically all of the OAuth-based APIs. Flickr really did pioneer OAuth. And it's a shame that the world didn't just adopt what Flickr was doing. I don't, maybe there was a reason they couldn't, or it wasn't adequate or whatever, because Flickr should have been in the middle of that world, and had it not been owned by Yahoo at the time, I'm thinking it probably would have become that. Because, you know, storage is storage. Who cares if you're just storing pictures? Store anything. You know, that was the shame. We never got a great storage system that also had a great UI. We still need that. And nobody wants to do it. And it's stupid. It's just stupid that we don't have this. Twitter should do it. Facebook should do it. LinkedIn could do it. Really, anybody. Evernote could have done it, could do it. Dropbox certainly should have done it. This blew me away. We showed them how to do it, and they just fucking wouldn't look. Well, you know, whatever. Okay, so 4 years in now to JavaScript. And I always want to be writing my utilities in JavaScript. That's why I did Node Runner. What Node Runner did was it took a tiny little piece of Frontier and made it work around JavaScript and Node.js. You know, what Frontier had was this thing where one of the many things it had, this is not it, that it had an object database and places. So if I put a script in the every second place, it was a table, and you could put things into that table, scripts. If any script that was in the every second table would run once a second. And then there was an every minute table, and an every hour table, and an overnight table. That was just, that alone was a very significant portion of the connective glue that I built for my web, because on those scripts they could do all kinds of, you know, web stuff. And so, you know, when I moved a website from one place to another, and the RSS feed now, I mean, my content management system from one place to another, now the RSS feed's being produced over here, but it needs to appear over here so that people will continue to get the updates. How is that implemented? An every minute script checks to see if the feed changed. If the feed changed, it copies it from A to B. A tiny little HTTP request, takes no time. I run on my desktop machine. I don't even notice it. Just sitting there, bing, bing, every minute it's doing this. And then there are things that run overnight. And so gradually what I've been doing is bringing across all this stuff from Frontier into JavaScript. So that's kind of a solved problem. And after a while, I didn't even use Node Runner anymore. I just wrote standalone little apps that had a, you know, did a set interval on a script and just trusted Node to do the scheduling for me, and it worked. For these little one-off things, it just simply, you know, putting it in Node Runner wasn't really that great an innovation. It sort of, so I didn't actually use it for all that much, but it was still useful to do the exercise, to have it there, and to have produced it, and to know how I will use it. So, but it's little one-off things that I used to write in Frontier all the time, and I still do write them in Frontier because I don't have a way to do it in JavaScript. And so that's what I'm leading up to, and that's why I picked up the, you know, microphone to record this today of all days, because this process has been happening for years. So what just happened? Okay. Well, you know, so here's the thing. Why is it so difficult to write these one-off little, you know, connective glue things in JavaScript running in Node? And the answer is, it's not difficult. It's a trick question. There's nothing difficult about it. Once you know, once you have reliable, you know, libraries to do all the things that you need to do, there's you, then the process is very predictable. It's just a lot of work. That's the problem. It's a lot of work. And so that's the first thing is, you want to create an environment that has all this stuff preloaded without you having to do anything. It's just there. Any script you write in that environment will have a way of formatting a date, will have a way of doing an HTTP request, or have a way of, I don't know, I have to go through the whole list. There's just, I've been spending days doing this, so there's a lot there. But it still didn't get good. So I built this. I felt like, okay, I'm ready, because, you know, Electron plus Node plus Chrome, you know, well, that's everything we ever had in Frontier and more. It's got all, doesn't have an object database, but there are sort of little object database-y type things. I'll find one and I'll put it in here. It still won't be as convenient as Frontier, because Frontier integrated the object database in inside the interpreter. And so it you didn't have to make procedure calls to access the database. It was just the namespace. Your scripts ran in an object database, and its variables were in that object database. Now, I've tried to explain this to people. I don't know of another environment that does this. If I did, I could say it's just like this, but I don't think there are other environments that do this. Not having to do a procedure call to get your data, you know. You know, you already, if you're a programmer, you already know what this is like. This is like a global variable in your app. Think about the difference between accessing a global variable and accessing something that's in your database. It's not hard to get the thing that's in the database, but it's also, you have to do things that you don't have to do to access the global. It's just that simple. If you can bury that capability in the operating system itself, in the language, you can make something higher level. And the Frontier was just chock full of stuff like that, of real things that we realized that, you know, this is something that could be sucked down into the OS. Which is, by the way, why I still have not made peace with the async model of JavaScript. Every time I read a story about how it's so much more efficient to be async, I go, no, you're wrong. You're telling a story because you've heard someone else tell it, not because it's the truth. It's not the truth. Managing threads is something that if you suck it down in the OS, it doesn't show up in your top-level model. And if once you factor it out at that level, all of a sudden, I mean, it's the other way around for me. I couldn't believe it. Look at the complexity of this shit. All it's doing is ABC. Instead of ABC, you have to build a callback structure. This is what people call callback hell. Funny thing happened is that I've come to love callback hell. Just love it. I love programming that way. It's just wonderful for the things that I put the big effort into. Those things is perfect. I just love it. I eat it up. I go, oh my God, look at how beautiful this thing is going to be. And then I write it and I go, oh, it's every bit as beautiful as I thought it would be. And they just run so smooth, and it's like, I scale, right? Shit that scales now. It's so, oh God, I can't believe it. It's great. So, where was I? Yeah, well, you should suck that shit down. It doesn't belong in my code. It belongs in the OS. And that was the second thing. The first thing was load the environment up with a bunch of all the things you ever have to use. Come up with standard procedure names for these things. Never change. Turns out I had a lot of those procedure names already sitting around because 20 years of work within the Frontier environment gave those things names. When, you know, they may not be, they aren't the names you thought of. And if you've never programmed in Frontier, they'll be strange names to you. But if you ever did program in Frontier, as I did for many, many years, that was an easily solved problem. So you may not like the names, but you'll, but when you get there, you'll find that the verbs are there, the ones you need. The other thing was, is that it needed to be synchronous. Everything needs to be synchronous. That became, I had to study that, I had to think about it, and program, and try to make it work, and approach it five different times over a period of a couple of years, until finally, just yesterday, I said, nope, everything has to be synchronous. Let's try that. And all the pieces fell into place. And now, my little one-off JavaScript utility script, which I'm now writing after less than a day's worth of underpinning work, they are happening fast and easy, and it's just like, it makes me so happy. I can't tell you. I finally have solved this problem. And having had the solution there all along, but just having been thrown this curveball, and the curveball being this, what I think of is just a huge lie that async has any place in a high-level language, which, by the way, JavaScript is supposed to be a high-level language. Notice the, it's JavaScript, not Java assembly language. It's supposed to be higher level. So this is the async shit doesn't belong in a high-level language. But so we'll accept that anachronism, that little anomaly. Anachronism is not the word. Anomaly is the right word. We will consider that JavaScript is a system language, even though it's called a scripting language. It's not. The thing about it, and it's why people write stuff in Python, because Python doesn't have this stupid shit. It's why people that like JavaScript have to use another language to write their connective glue. But I don't think you have to. I think that the trick is to get over this guilt that we have about using synchronous stuff. Because once you have synchronous, now you can start combining your procedures. You can do a file.copy of file.readwhole file of something. I mean, you can just put these things together in the ways that just make natural sense so that they're self-documenting and you understand them when you see them, and which is also important, by the way, for the DevOps stuff. Because if you're doing DevOps in addition to your day job, you know, it's, you're going to depend on readability for documentation in a lot of cases. Yeah. It's nice that if you do document the shit, but who does? Anyway, I think I got the point across. That was what I wanted to talk about today. Just a place in the evolution of this stuff. I don't know. You know, I just want to, let me just add one more thing. I've developed this whole source code development system in Frontier for doing all my JavaScript development. And it was really liberating because I committed at the beginning that I'm not sharing this with anybody. This is just for me. And I have to say, it got really good because of that one constraint that was there. Actually, let's call it a constraint. Because there's trying to make stuff for other people. If you give yourself just all the time in the world to make something that's just great for yourself, you can really do something cool there. So like I said, I don't know if this is ever going to see the light of day. But the ideas should, and who knows, maybe somebody will listen to this and go, oh, wow, I've been having the same thoughts, and I'm going to be working on this shit one way or another, so why don't we just share what we know, which I'm totally happy to do. That's one of the reasons I put this out there. Okay, so I'll talk to you all later. Bye-bye.